Candlelight by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 5. It was becoming difficult to go out in the grounds or to drive along the plaza in the wheelchair. Curtains would twitch slightly at my passing, and perhaps just one eye would show as an inquisitive person followed my transit. Whispers came. "Yes, that's him, all right, that's him." Others, more forthright, came out in the open and said they'd heard about me on French TV, or they had read about me in the French language papers. Some went so far as to say that there seemed to be quite a conspiracy to do whatever harm they could. The number of visitors who were just taking snapshots increased. It was noticeable that they all managed to aim the camera in my direction. On one occasion, I was riding along in my wheelchair by the side of the road, and a car came rushing out of the distance and slowed up with a screech of brakes beside me. The driver drove along at my speed, and, highly dangerously, he used a cine camera to film me at the same time as he was trying to drive his car on a public road. There came the time when the whispers and the irritations became insupportable, so we discussed matters, and I said, "Oh, let's get this Mr. Telly in then, and I will tell you what I'm going to do. I have had so much double-crossing from people, not only the press, but from all manner of people, that I think I will use a tape recorder and record what is said so that afterwards, if there should be any dispute, well, then I shall have evidence to prove what happened, free from defective memories, free from what I may gently call reporter's license." Within a very few days, there came a rush and a roar, something like a modern jet plane taking on or off a space capsule or something, and the very fast modern car belonging to Mr. Telly swooshed up the road, violently turned right, and swung down to the entrance many floors below. Minutes later, there came hurrying footsteps and almost a skid stop, followed by pounding at the door. Mr. Telly entered. Of course, it must be very clearly understood that Mr. Telly is not his real name. His real name doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with this book, but I thought that as television and newspaper, radio and all that were much the same sort of racket, I would invent a generic term. This must be made clear because, in the past, I have really, truly, honestly, seriously had people write to me and ask me about Mrs. Hensbaum or Rosie Hips and people like that, not realizing that I was just using made-up names. Well, Mr. Telly came in. We had a few friendly words of greeting, and then he told me he'd got a whole list of questions, and I said, "Well, look, I'm a very sick man indeed, and I do not know that I can stand all the time and hardship or many hours of interview. So what I suggest is this. You give me all your questions, and I will answer some of them here and now, and I will answer the others in writing." Mr. Telly nodded wisely and produced wads of paper from his pocket. Some had pretty doodles on them, for he was a great doodler, and then he put the questions on the bed before him. "Before we start," I said, I do want you to understand clearly, Mr. Telly, that in this material I retain my copyright because I propose to use all this material in a book, which I'm going to write for the English language. You do understand that, don't you? Mr. Telly looked a bit sour, and he said, How am I going to manage, then, if it's your copyright? I cannot use the material myself, can I? Well, yes, you can, Mr. Telly, I said, for I'm telling you that you can use all this material in the French book, which I understand you're going to write, and I will use it in the English book. So then we shall not conflict with what we're going to do, shall we? Mrs. Rampa, who was listening intently, nodded sagely, and then Mr. Telly said, that's all right, then. Now then, I said, this picture you brought from that French language paper, well, it makes me rather sorry that I'm not more proficient in French. It's interesting that these fellows label me as a gentle fake. Actually, I'm neither gentle nor a fake. But surely their comments are some sort of a compliment, because there's so little gentleness in the world today. It seems that Jews and Arabs are knocking the stuffings out of each other, and Christians are trying to see what is inside the other fellow, and bombs are being tossed about in Montreal, and the press and the TV are being savage to anyone. Yes, I suppose it is quite a compliment to be labeled gentle, even if it is in the connotation of fake. But, you know, this just shows how inaccurate the press really is, because I've always maintained that it does not matter who writes a thing, so long as the person writes stuff that is of benefit to other people. So long as he writes the truth. That is what I say. I say it does not matter about me. It does not matter who I am. It does not matter what I am. If what I write brings someone some good, and letters which I have proved that I do bring good to people, then my precise identity, or whether I sign my name with an A, a Y, or a Z, surely it does not matter. This interview, you know, is really just pandering to the inquisitiveness of the public. You seem to think that it's a good idea, but I'm not sure that I agree with you. One of the complaints I have is this. I tell the absolute truth, and yet the press wriggle around, taking my statements out of context and making up something quite different, which I certainly did not say and I did not imply. I state that all that I have written is true. How can anyone distort that? But I have no doubt that the press will distort it somehow. Why do not the press go in for some sort of research? Surely they have enough money for it. They could do some research into authentic cases of transmigration. Even in the Bible there are cases of transmigration. And throughout history, throughout the libraries of the world, there are many really authentic cases recorded. Now, I must be careful when I say really authentic cases, because otherwise some moronic pressman will say, he uses really, therefore he's implying he is not genuine. But that is not so at all. I state that I have experienced definite, authentic transmigration. And now you ask about this plumber business. Well, what is wrong with being a plumber? I am sure you have found the services of a plumber extremely useful at times. In fact, at times, the services of a plumber can be a darn sight more beneficial to you than the services of a pressman. You get locked in the smallest room, for instance, and it takes more than a pressman to get one out. However, whether you believe it or not, and I couldn't care less, no, I have never been a plumber. If I had, I would be far richer than I am at present, because I believe that plumbers are extremely well paid. Certainly they charge enough. I have just said about you being locked in the smallest room, but there is one report which I had repeated to me some time ago, which gave me very considerable glee. There was a pressman with a very bad character, one who persecuted me without mercy, and he went aboard a ship to do some interviewing, and he was not at all wanted. He was not popular, even with his fellow reporters, and if anyone is unpopular with a fellow reporter, then he must be a pretty crummy specimen indeed. But anyway, this reporter had to go to the you-know-where, and while he was in that very small space, some of his associates barricaded the door, preventing him from coming out. Consequently, he missed the entire interview, and that was a good thing, because he was not a good writer, nor did he know the meaning of truth. But then, this could apply to all pressmen now, couldn't it? Well, returning to this plumber business, no, I do not know anything about it because, as I have stated, my story is a true story, and the pages in the Rampa story will give you as much as I know about this past life. Look at it like this. You go to a cinema show and you see a film which, for some extraordinary reason, is being run backwards. That is, the film runs from now to then. Well, you become confused. Your sense of time is altered because everything is reversed. But you try to remember a film you saw, oh, what shall we say, 20 years ago. How much do you know about it now? Probably you were not at all interested. And if you wrote out exactly what happened in that film, which is being run backwards, it would not necessarily tally precisely with actual events. I have a completely eidetic memory about everything which has happened to me personally. But I'm not good at all trying to portray the life story of a person whom I have never met and whom I never want to meet. What is transmigration? Well, I thought everybody knew what that was. If they don't know what it is, then they can't be very good at their religious studies, can they? Transmigration is stated to be the movement of one soul from one body into another body. There are many, many recorded instances in the world's history in which the soul of a person has departed from a body, but before death occurred to that body, another body was taken over. It's as simple as that. You can say, if you wish to make it clearer, that there is a car. The car stops, the driver gets out. Another driver gets in and drives off. The driver in this case can be likened to the soul. So the soul, which is the first driver, left the car, which is the body, and a fresh soul, which is the second driver, got into the car and drove off. Just as you can have a car which is driven by two people, one after the other, of course, so you can have a body which is occupied first by one soul and then by another. There's nothing very strange about it. Another way in which you could look at it, if it helps to make it clearer, is this. You have a storage battery, and the charge, which in this case is the soul, goes out of it with use. So then it's charged up again, and in effect, the same battery gets a different soul. The difficulty is that, here in this western part of the world, people are more interested in making money and in harming their neighbors. But in the eastern part of the world, there is a completely different concept of the purpose of living. In the Far East, people are more interested in the spiritual side of life. Things of the spirit have greater value than the things of the flesh. But you are still on about this plumber business and how it started. Well, in England, there are many snobs. We must admit that. And if a person is a plumber or a garbage collector, then he's considered to be pretty low and not to have any education, and is supposed to touch a greasy forelock and say, "Yes, God, no, God," to the customers who do not pay their bills. So the best way to pull a man down in England is to say, "Oh, he's the son of a plumber," or "He's the plumber himself," which I gather is considered to be even worse. I cannot help smiling, though, when I think that the founder of the Christian religion was a carpenter, which is no higher than being a plumber. I have been reminded of a case which illustrates this very well. Lord Hambledon is an important and cultured man, but there was someone talking about him in a disparaging manner and remarked, "Oh, that fellow Smith who sells books." That, however, still does not affect the true status of Lord Hambledon, whose name is also Smith, and who is, after all, England's biggest and perhaps most important bookseller. This is the age of Kali, the age of disruption, where the crummy little man in the street and his snooty-nosed wife, done up with loads of powder and face goo, try to pull down all that really matters, try to sneer at tradition, try to sneer at culture, and have no time for education, because through television and the press, people are very superficially educated above their means and above their brains. They hear fantastic tales about Hollywood homes, and they get communist ideas that they too should have such homes, homes which really exist only in the fevered imagination of the film people. The worst aspect of our present civilization is how a very noisy minority can make it appear that a person is a fraud or a person is hated, etc. We get the same thing in strikes. We get a few hooters rousing the general public to an absolute frenzy. We get strong-armed goons who beat up a person senseless if he tries to stand on the side of decency. And so the average person who would like to know the truth is driven by fear to listen to the rabble and the goons and the press. But you tell me something. If a man has a big firm, or if he supervises, does he necessarily have to be classed as the lowest of the lot? For instance, if a man owns a newspaper, does he have to be just the copy devil, or whatever you call the fellow nowadays? Or, if a man has a great big home appliance firm, does he count as a pipe fitter or a plumber, or is he the head of the firm? It is a terrible thing nowadays how people are so utterly snobbish. What was Moses? Surely Moses was a waif, a homeless child who was just picked up somewhere. And what was Jesus? The son of a carpenter, we're told. And Northern Ireland trying to destroy all the other Christians here again. As I said previously, that is an even older trade than that of a plumber. To bring it back to our present era, the press have also started a good thing in their own mind by bringing down royalty. Do they not refer so frequently to Princess Margaret as Mrs. Jones? Did they not refer to that very great man, Prince Philip, as just a foreigner who managed to get adopted into the British Navy or something? Strange, isn't it? And so why should we not call the editor of a newspaper a rag picker? After all, he does have a rag, does he not? Again, I'm going to state that all my books are true, and I'm going to tell you that I have a very special reason for insisting on this truth. I will even tell you why I so insist. Transmigration is fact, not fantasy, and there will be many others like me coming to this world. If I can save any of those from the misery and the hell and the persecution which I have endured through hatred here, then my own suffering will have been more than justified. People who have accomplished transmigration and have talked about it have been regarded as something strange. Some have been put in mental homes. But if a person appears strange to another person, he is feared. And if he is feared, he is also hated. Have you ever seen a dog approaching a strange dog? Have you ever seen how it circles around, sniffing and growling, and it's always afraid it's going to lose something? Well, that is how humans behave with me, because they consider that I am different in some way, and so they try to claim that I am a fraud. Then they try to claim that because I am so strange, I must be a fake. I am not. You know, I am one alone at present, the lonely man, but there will be others coming by transmigration, and they will carry on where I have to leave off through ill health and poverty, both caused by persecution. People persecute and fear that which they don't understand. People hate those who take them into realms which they have not before entered. People loathe those who write about matters beyond the limited experiences of the reader. People try to destroy that which does not conform to their own concepts and patterns. As witness, the assorted Christians in whose concepts may be microscopically different. as witness the American whites trying to enslave or destroy the American coloreds because they do not conform to the white pattern. The path of the bringer of truth is hard. Only the sadist and the pornographer is lauded and loaded with gold. No matter the consequences, all my books are true. My wife has been approached by pressmen who wanted her to write something sensational, something that the public could lap up. It did not have to be true. If it was the truth, so they said, it would not be sensational, it would be just the truth. But one man offered her quite a considerable sum of money to deny everything that I claim and to make out all sorts of strange things. He wanted sex orgies. He wanted underground temples, obscene rites. Naturally, my wife refused. But it shows that there is a little segment of the press out to falsify the truth. They cannot bear the truth. It has no interest for them. Theirs has been an astonishing interest in my sex life. Now, I can answer that easily. That is very, very simple to answer. I do not have a sex life. I live as a hermit. One could say, and it has been said too often, that I live as a lodger in my own home. But there is no trouble with morality here. Each of us has respect for the others. And you know, we're not all sex-mad perverts. We leave that for others. Oh yes, I must tell you this. This should make you laugh. I had one communication from a lady, a French-Canadian, of course, who stated with great triumph that she knew I was a fake because I looked at my cats with love when she saw me on a filmed program. Love, my little cats? Of course I do. I really, genuinely love both these little people. I love all cats, but I do not always extend that love to humans. Now, a word straight from the horse's mouth, or am I just a donkey instead for being lured into this? Anyway, here's a word straight from my mouth. It really astounds me how press people drum up a lot of criticism when they have not even read my books. Now, if somebody wants to criticize my books, and if they know something about the subject, why do they not read the books first? Probably because they will find that there is nothing they can criticize after. However, there it is. And yes, you can put all this into print if you want to. I would agree to it, but only if you include this sentence. I, Tuesday, Lovesang Rampa, state definitely that all my books are true, and I am who I claim to be, and I state that others will come by transmigration. I hope they will get a better welcome than I did. Oh, good gracious, I thought we had finished all these foolish questions. But if, as you say, it's so vitally important to answer them, what are they? Critics' queries? But I don't mind critics. These people who criticize because they're ignorant and they don't know anything. But come on, bring out your questions. What are they and what's the first one? Question. People write in and say that you do not look like a Tibetan. Answer, oh, they do they? How many people of any nationality look as popular imagination would have them look? Take, for example, England, a small country. Can you say that anyone is a typical Englishman? Consider a small, dark Welshman. Compare him with the big, blonde Scotsman. Do they look alike? They're both still people of Great Britain, aren't they? Then take a person from Manchester and a person from Cornwall. They're both English, but they may be utterly, utterly different. Consider high-caste Indians. Some of them are so white-skinned that they can, and they do, pass for Europeans. But the typical Indian of distorted imagination might be a small, dark little man, usually clad in rags. That is nonsense. It's quite absurd to say that there's a classical person of any race. For example, John Bull, the typical British cartoon figure. Is there such a person? Or Uncle Sam? Is there such a person as Uncle Sam? No. People who say, oh, he doesn't look like a Tibetan, are just displaying their ignorance of life and life's forces. The average Tibetan of popular Western imagination is of Mongolian origin. But the higher the caste of Tibetan, the whiter and the more European he appears to be. Question. What can you tell us about reincarnation? People write in and say that reincarnation is a thing they really cannot accept. Answer. What a fantastic thing that is. Reincarnation is or has been taught in most religions. For an illustration, let me remind you that the original teachings of Christ are very, very different from the teachings of the present. Things are changing. Often the Vatican will issue an edict changing an interpretation. A person who's been a saint for centuries is no longer a saint. Dogma, which has been accepted for centuries, becomes changed overnight by papal edict. The same thing happens in the case of reincarnation. Christ taught reincarnation. He taught that people came back time after time and then went back to the place where, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. But the priests, round about the year 60, decided to alter the teachings of Christ, and they found that it was not wise to teach reincarnation because people would have a jolly good time in one life, thinking they would pay for it in the next life, in the comfortable distant future. So, in the Christian belief, reincarnation was dropped. The original documents, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and all that type of thing, teach reincarnation. But isn't it amusing that I, a non-Christian, should have to teach the Christian belief to Christians? Many religions believe that people have to come to this earth as children return to school time after time. Children first go to the infants class, then at the end of that term they go home for recreation. At the end of the recreation, they are born to the school life again. If they've done well enough in their previous term, they come back to a higher grade. Then, when they have continued successfully for that term, they die to the school life and return home again, going back to school after the suitable holidays. And so they go on like that, returning to school until the end of the school career. At the end of each successive term, they return home. only to go back to school in a higher grade until they have progressed through the school, or as we have to point out, life. Then they return home to come back to school no more, or come back to Earth no more. Question. I have here a French magazine. It prints the information that you are a plumber. It says that you have been a plumber all your life. What about that? Answer. Oh, so we get back to this plumber business again, eh? Well, I wish I could charge the going rate for plumbers. I could do quite well on that money, but no, I repeat, I am not a plumber. I've never been a plumber, and, well, how can they possibly say that I am now living as a plumber when actually I am either bedridden or confined to a wheelchair? That just shows how press reports are frightfully inaccurate. Question. People say that you are very rich and that you live in absolute luxury. Answer. Just look about you. Do you think this is luxury? Did you not say that the floor is cold and I should have some carpet on it? There is no carpet on my floor, Mr. Telly. And while on the subject, I do not even have a television set, nor do I have a car. Is that luxury? It's very, very far from luxury, but I will give you a definite answer. No, I do not live in luxury. No, I do not have a big income, as you seem to imagine. Or, let me be fair to you, as some of your colleagues seem to imagine. To start with, some publishers in England take as much as 50% from my small royalties before I get anything. Then, of course, there are agents' fees. Incidentally, the agents' fees are an investment because my agent, Mr. Stanley Knight, saves me an awful lot of work, and he keeps me on the right path. If a book is published in a different country, there may be two sets of agents' fees, and then there's tax. In addition, of course, there are all manner of expenses connected with book writing, typewriter, typing, copying, and all the rest of it. If the complaint is that I live in this particular apartment building, well, let me tell you this. It is cheaper living here than in many other apartment buildings. There are many advantages to living in a place such as this. I have no car, as I told you, for the simple reason that I can't afford one. But one exceptionally good advantage in being here is that there are doormen, people who keep unwanted, uninvited guests away. People come here, and unless they can produce some conclusive evidence that I am willing to see them, they're just told, no, no admittance. And to me, that's worth quite a lot of money. But if you really want to know what I do with the small amount of money I get, I'll tell you. I do research. I'm doing research into the matter of the human aura. All humans have an aura around the body. There's no point in going into details here, because all that is written about in considerable detail in my book, You Forever. If people could photograph the human aura, they would tell you in advance about illnesses which were likely to affect this physical body. tell you in advance, while the illness was preventable or curable. You see, illness shows in the colors of the aura long before it manifests itself in the physical body. Research, equipment, costs a lot of money, and because I spend so much on research, I have little indeed left for myself. Sometimes, not even enough for medical necessities. By the way, let me just interject my own remarks here for the moment, apart from questions. I cannot understand why all these personal and impertinent questions are being asked. I write true books, and it does not mean that because a reader pays a few cents for a book that he has the right to inquire into my private life. Why should I not write to some of my readers and ask how much money they make and what do they do with it? And why should I not ask about their sex life? Do you think they'd answer that? But no matter, let us get on with these questions and answers, because I've already told you I will answer some more. Question. You say you are a monk. Then why are you living with two women? Answer. Now, that really is an utterly absurd question. Why shouldn't I live with two women? Doesn't the Pope, for instance, have women around him? He does, you know. He has a housekeeper, for one. But anyway, why not say that I live with four females? Two of the females are Siamese cat ladies, and real ladies they are, too. But I've already made it clear about my sex life, or to be more precise, my lack of sex life. So there's no point in going further into that except to point out that even Gandhi had women attendants. Christ had women about him. And if we are to believe the Bible, Christ even mixed with prostitutes. So what is wrong in mixing with women? They are humans, aren't they? You will find that in Tibet, some monks were even married, and their wives lived in the lamasaries. Now, I cannot help pondering upon the reason for such a stupid question. Question. Why did you come to Canada? The press in England said you had gone to your Canadian hideout. Did you come here just to hide? Answer. Why did I come to Canada? Why not? I have to live somewhere. And if I had gone to Timbuktu, some clot would have said, why did Lobsang Rampa live in Timbuktu? After all, why do people live in Canada? Is there anything wrong with the place? Is it a crime to live here? The answer is that I live in Canada for probably the same reason as you do. I live here because I want to live here. I have taken out Canadian citizenship, and now I'm a full citizen of this Canada. Question. Why are you so antisocial? Why do you live like a hermit? Why don't you meet some people? Are you afraid or something? Answer. You know, I would love to stop here and have a jolly good laugh. But time is pressing on, so let us get on with the sensible answer to a foolish question. I live as a hermit because I am utterly sick and tired of senseless questions and senseless people asking senseless questions. I've had people visit me, and I've been absolutely sickened by their selfishness. They say, oh, what can you do for me? I want you to do this and I want you to do that. People rarely ask what they can do for me. And another thing, before I learned by hard experience, I did see a few people, but many of them went away from me and completely misreported everything that had happened. Some tried to make money out of the press, and they went along. They sold misinformation for quite a packet of money. Now I have decided that there is no reason why I should pander to the senseless curiosity of people. I'm not a freak in a cage. I'm not a sideshow attraction in a circus. So I do not, and I will not, see people. I'm not afraid to meet people. Why should I be? I have told all there is to be told in my books. But then again, why should I meet people if I don't want to? Do you, Mr. Telly, meet everyone who thinks they can just drop in and waste your time? Why should I meet people when so many are just trying to criticize me or trying to get something for nothing? It seems to be thought that because I write books which people can buy for a few cents, that I have to put myself up as a sort of Aunt Sally and answer any fool question or see any mentally bereft person who could manage to totter to my door. Let me state, finally, that people do not have a right of access to see me. They do not have a right to come and see me whenever they think they will. I must tell you this. It has overtones of humor to it. When I lived in a different apartment here, I had a man come to my door after midnight. He was from a Middle Eastern country, and he arrived with quite a few suitcases. He came to the door, and when it was opened, he tried to get inside, saying, "I have come to live with you as your son." Well, that's something, eh? Eventually, we got rid of him. But I saw him much later in the morning, and he went away, apparently, satisfied. Some months after, I received a blackmail demand for $2,000, and a very savage demand that I should embrace and write about some peculiar religion that I'd never even heard of before. He was very insistent that I should write books in praise of that religion. Well, this was quite fantastic to me, but serious to him. And I've never been easily intimidated, so, unfortunately for the man concerned, he quite accidentally enclosed an indication of his address on about his sixth letter to me. The first letters were quite anonymous. Anyway, I got in touch with the U.S. Postal Inspection Department and with the police of the relevant area. The gentleman concerned was living in the U.S. illegally. He's not there now. And while we're still on the subject, I can tell you this. I have had people who have come to me in the greatest distress and have written to me claiming that the most dreadful things were going to happen to them and only I could save them. So, out of compassion, I have agreed to see them. One woman immediately wanted to jump into bed with me, an offer which I refused, and so incurred her enmity. She has, ever since, been trying to harm me. But others said they invented the whole thing because they knew that, without very good reason, I would not see them. Because of the treachery of this nature, I do not see people anymore. Question. You have a business in England making touchstones and phonograph records. How do you say that you are poor when you have these business interests which bring you in money? No, I do not have a business in England or anywhere else in the world. I have no business interests of any sort except in writing my books. And Mr. Knight, my wonderfully reliable agent, looks after that business for me. But of course there are touchstones being made, and I did design them. But it's not my business, and I am no part of the business. Question. The press here publishes a letter which they say is from the Dalai Lama and saying that you were a fake. And what do you say about that? Answer. The press made much of a purported statement by some secretary employed by the Dalai Lama to the effect that I was not genuine. But the Dalai Lama himself has never said such a thing, nor has his secretary said, I am not genuine. The letter, for example, said he places no credence, which is a horse of another color. But let us look into this matter. Anyone with even the meanest intelligence would know that people in high places have quite a number of secretaries. Leaders of countries have several secretaries, and sometimes these secretaries have limited authority to write what they consider to be fit, because their employers do not have time to deal with all the correspondence themselves. So if the fellow has a personal dislike, then he gets a wonderful opportunity to vent his spite on the object of his dislike. And in this particular case, I state absolutely that there is a secretary to the Dalai Lama who has no liking for me at all. And so this secretary makes remarks about, we place no credence, which is quite a different thing from what the press tried to convey. By the way, you've just told me, yourself, that there were two lamas discussing the Rampa affair, and one lama was supposed to be very opposed to me, and the other was absolutely fervent in his support. Yet the press, of course, take the side of the opposition. Why? There's a very well-known American author who went to see the Dalai Lama in India, and when Mr. B came back, he sent me a special message to the effect that, when Tibet was free again, the Dalai Lama would gladly welcome me to the Potala. No, do not place words in the mouth of the Dalai Lama which he has not uttered. Instead, regard the backstairs secretaries as suspects. You don't know their motives? Perhaps I do. Once again, I will make another remark which doesn't so far come in your questions, but I gather you have a whole bunch of the wretched things. The press seem to be very confused about my identity, but why? Look at some well-known cases. Who was Shakespeare? Who was Bacon? Who was Moses? I mention these merely because they are so well-known, and again, just to show how remarkable some press statements are, I have already mentioned a press statement about Christ going to Japan after he, quote, ran out, unquote, on his brother. Well, what do you think about all that? Do you believe all this? It is in the press, you know? But if one is to believe all the muck the press published about me, well, why not believe all the muck published about everyone else? Question. How old are you? Why do you refuse to give your age?
Answer. I do refuse to give my age. It's nothing to do with anyone else. My age, which is far more than you would believe, does not affect my book writing. It doesn't add any proof to anything. And in any case, I do not want to give any proof, because I just couldn't care less about pleasing the press. The ordinary decent people who read my books do believe me. But as is always the case, an extremely noisy minority make a commotion quite impossible to credit unless one is the victim. But the answer is, no, I will not give my age, and the sole reason is because I do not want to. End of chapter 5.